welcome to Musings on Golf. Kelly Elbin along with Bob Bupka here. Bob, we look forward to the return of Tiger Woods this week at the PNC Championship. And at the same time, we look back today with a special best of show featuring PGA of America professional Randy Smith, who has taught, mentored, and really made Scottie Scheffler help make him the number one player in the world. We talked to Randy earlier this year. Going to be a lot of fun hearing from Randy once again. Hey, Bob, did you watch any of the showdown last night with his pupil and Rory McIlroy pretty much dismantling the live pair of Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka?
Yeah, I didn't find it too entertaining, so it was hard to keep my attention on that. I mean, we got to get back to basics. We got to get back to real golf. We're becoming a three-ring circus in golf, and I don't like any bit of it. And I know your dad, who devoted his life to the PGA of America, he wouldn't like all of these shenanigans that are being tried. And now we got looming the PGA of America making a decision, as I hear it, that players are going to be getting paid. I mean, there's too much going on, Cal.
Okay, so let's tackle a couple of those, Bob. If you're going to have these rip and grin, end of season funny events, to me, and they've had them for a long time, right? You had them back, with Arnold and Jack and Gary and Lee and so forth. They better be entertaining, okay? The golf last night, they tried some different ways. They had 3 6-hole sets of matches, if you will. One was a best ball, one was an alternate shot, one was singles. Rory got off to a fast start. There really wasn't a lot of banter. And I understand your perspective on this. But you have to be entertaining. You have to get the audience to want to watch more and hear more than just the golf. And I don't know, the personalities, maybe that's just sort of the nature of the personalities these days, Bob. But to your Ryder Cup point, look, I think it's really a shame. And I know you and I, before we came on, you feel very strongly about the PGA of America making a decision that I personally understand, doesn't mean I agree with, that they're going to allocate, $200,000 in a stipend to each of the 12 players who are going to be on the U.S. team, Ryder Cup team of 25, and $300,000 to go towards charity. Bob, I just know the whole idea of any kind of payment really kind of sickens you, doesn't it, for the Ryder Cup?
Well, absolutely. And I don't understand. You know, I've been around Ryder Cup a long time. Wrote a book on the Ryder Cup back in 97. I have strong allegiance for this country. I have even stronger allegiance, not stronger, but equal support for the PGA of America. And it was great. It was a great institution. When your dad was president, boy, you could be proud to know somebody that was in the PGA of America. And now it's all about money, money, money. I'm sick and tired. These guys got enough money. I mean, the European players want to be part of the team, part of the team. American players now want to get paid to play. I mean, there's a big difference between those two perspectives. I think the Europeans got the right idea, and it would not surprise me, Kelly. I'd be interested to get your opinion. Would not surprise me on day one in September, when we show up at Bethpage, that when the United States team gets introduced, they're going to be booed. I mean, unheard of. But I think it's a distinct possibility.
I hope you're wrong. Yes, it's a possibility. A lot can happen between now and third week in September of 25 at Bethpage on your beloved Long Island. Look, there's been an undercurrent to this from what happened in Rome in 23. And then on the flip side, Bob, if anybody has watched this fabulous video that the Europeans put out about the experience in Rome for them, and what the family means to them as far as the Ryder Cup, it goes back to what I and a lot of people have said. I've always believed the United States wants to win the Ryder Cup. They want to win, the guys. The Europeans, Bob, they live for it. They've said it. They would pay to play, whether that's true or not. That's how they feel. For our guys, whether it's a Cantlay or Xander or somebody sort of saying, hey, you know what? You guys are PGA of America's making X number of millions. You're charging $750 for a single ticket on a Friday. You got to help me out a little bit. I can see where they're coming from, but I think I agree with you. It's a really bad look on the part of the Americans, Bob.
Yeah, if they needed the money,
Right.
it would be different. And
Right.
I think it's probably a good time to bring this up, a sad note. We talked about it, but one of our dear friends, Jeff Babineau, died of a heart attack, 62 years old. And I just got word there's going to be a GoFundMe for the Babineau family on December 28th. So if all lovers of golf can keep that in mind, that is December 28th, a GoFundMe for Jeff Babineau's family, one of the all-time great guys ever to cover the game of golf.
Yeah, and just to clarify a little bit on that, the GoFundMe, you could contribute. One can contribute any time now online to that. There will be a celebration of Jeff's life later in December. But yes, Bob, I know their target is to raise, I believe, $100,000. There are a variety of medical bills out there, and I, for one, will do what I can, and I hope a lot of people will. Hey, Bob, I want to, before we get into to Randy Smith, this the kind of the history of golf instruction. I think when Jack Nicklaus worked with Jack Grout, that was, Bob, I think the first time, wasn't it, that a notable tour player had someone by his side to really guide him in the swing mechanics, et cetera, on an ongoing basis, right?
No, yeah, 100% right. And but what makes the relationship between Randy Smith and Scottie Scheffler so special? I mean, Scottie went to Randy when he was seven.
Yeah.
Now he's been the number one player in the world for who knows how long, and never has had another teacher. I mean, it's a wonderful relationship, and we're so proud in this holiday season to be able to bring back Randy Smith on Musings on Golf. I know a lot of people enjoyed it the first time round. I think they'll even enjoy it more this time.
I think you're going to enjoy this little one too. Just before we get to that, I was going through some archives, and here's a story from the week of the 1969 Ryder Cup in Southport, England. This is a UPI story. I don't see a whole lot of UPI stories around these days, Bob, but this story had to do with my dad, Max Elbin, past president of the PGA of America at that time. And here's how it reads. Talks about Jack Nicklaus practicing for the Ryder Cup and going out and playing well on the back nine of a practice round. Says the 29-year-old star from Columbus, Ohio, said a tip from the former US PGA president, Max Elbin, produced a dramatic improvement after a mediocre front nine, which Nicklaus covered in a 4-over 40. Nicklaus took Elbin's advice and altered his grip slightly. Quote, "It enabled me to get my left side through the ball better and made a lot of difference. I played pretty well after that," said Jack. Now, whether he what exactly that was, but I think th there was a trust factor there, certainly with the club professional at that time. But that was, I think, really even certainly he was with Mr. Grout at that time, but you didn't have any of the high profile peoples like a Butch Harmon later on. That you have today. But I thought that was a cool little anecdote of Jack, getting a tip from someone he trusted at that time, and my dad, and it helped him out.
Yeah, it brings a little bit of a tear to my eye hearing that story
Yeah.
because had Max's son Kelly listened to Max, Kelly would be playing on the Ryder Cup instead of
That's
talking about it.
just true. Well, impatience and maybe not the quite the golf swing that I could have kept me back. No, I will take that back. I do have a good golf swing. Short game has been the problem. Okay, Bob, we've talked long enough. Let's hear once again, the terrific interview that we did earlier this year with Randy Smith, who has worked so diligently with Scottie Scheffler. You will hear that right after these messages from our partners at Musings on Golf. Our friends at William and Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William and Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com.
You flew the trap on 6. You birdied 12 and 13. You closed out the match 4 and 3. From your numbers to your windows, everything was dialed. That was yesterday. Outperform your best. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
The 106th PGA Championship is just hours away, Bob. And our guest today is once again helping world number one Scottie Scheffler prepare to try to win another major golf championship. He's been honored many times over by the PGA of America as its Golf Professional of the Year in 1996, its Teacher of the Year in 2002. He's also a member of the PGA of America Hall of Fame. Furthermore, he's the Golf Professional Emeritus at Royal Oaks Country Club in Dallas, where he's been involved in some capacity for more than 47 consecutive years. What a pleasure to welcome PGA of America professional Randy Smith to Musings on Golf. Randy, how are you?
Doing good, Kelly. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. It's such a thrill to have you, and it's been so special to see what Scottie Scheffler has done just within the past few months. But the story of Scottie Scheffler and your involvement with him goes way beyond that, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, it really does. You know, I guess it was about 20 years ago when he popped up on the scene here at Royal Oaks.
Well, now you and Bob go back a little bit, Mr. Bubka.
We were reminiscing before we came on the air. I remember I served as an MC when Randy was a guest speaker at a private party down in Augusta, Georgia. And I said to myself, wow, I remember doing that. What happened to my career compared to what happened to your career? Man, I made the wrong turn somewhere.
No, you no. didn't either. You just keep doing what you're doing, youngster.
You're right about that, Randy. It's been a wonderful ride. And it's guys like you in the sport of golf that make it so thoroughly enjoyable. Just this last weekend, and before we get to the meat of our interview here, had the opportunity to be on the range at Insperity, Randy. And what a thrill it is to have, you know, the likes of Tom Kite, Ben Crenshaw, Hale Irwin, Pat Bradley, Nancy Lopez, Lee Trevino, Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, all come by and say hello. I mean, I was pinching myself. I thought I was in golf fairyland.
No, no, no. That's a show of respect for a long and very, very valuable career.
Well, it's been a great ride. And speaking of a great ride, let me ask you this. You know, the last two PGA championships played at Valhalla, won by the world number ones at the time, Tiger in 2000, Rory in 2014. And let me deviate right here. If I would have told you in 2014 that we'd get to 2024 and Rory McIlroy will have not won another major, what would your response have been?
It'd been a hard one to believe, Bob. Such a talented player. He really can play. And he's played pretty well, but he just hadn't picked up that major. To me, that's a little unbelievable.
What do you see as the keys for for Scotty to be the third straight world number one to prevail at Valhalla?
Well, first of all, I'd like to see that trend continue. I was there on both those other events, and remember the golf course. I remember the course from, you know, the Ryder Cup. Kind of remember a lot about how people played it. And for Scotty to do, you know, what he's capable of doing, it's pretty obvious. When Kerry Haig sets up a golf course, it's got championship rough on it. Scotty, with Scotty's length, if you can keep the ball in the fairway, his iron play is pretty specific. And I think that that right there would be a key to success for him.
Let me ask you this, Randy. You taught Justin Leonard, who went on to win an Open Championship. How do you compare Justin and Scotty in terms of their personalities and how they learned and developed as golfers?
You know, the more I've thought about it, Bob, I've been asked that question before. They were very similar, especially when they were younger. And the biggest thing was their competitive nature. Both of them were very, very, very competitive. Both of them were extremely hard workers. But, you know, the definition of a hard worker, you see people beat golf balls for beating golf balls. You know, Justin never hit a golf ball when he was small and until this day that he looked away from on the practice range. He would watch what that ball would do until it landed on, no matter a miss or a really good shot. Scotty is very similar to that. Both of them are extremely target-oriented when they're practicing, when they were little. You know, Scotty, from the day I saw him, you know, everything was tied to a target. You just don't see that in young kids, Bob.
Over the years, you know, there's been what they call driving range players. And, you know, they don't bring that to the golf course. But the common mistake that I've witnessed, the real good players, they don't hit a practice shot without having a target. The mediocre players, they just tee up a ball on the driving range and swing at it, but they weren't aiming at anything, and that makes it a lot easier to hit it well.
Well, you know, it's real easy to hit the ocean off the back of an ocean liner with a golf ball. And, you know, if you're tied to a target, it has a bearing on how you swing the golf club. If you're looking at a target and you're trying to feed a ball into a target, all of a sudden the shot shape becomes very important because the ending point is the target. And great players will tie to the target. That goes all the way to short game, all the way to the cup.
Hey, Randy, let's go back to the start with you and Scotty. Specifically, when did you first meet him? I know that my understanding the parents moved to the Dallas area. And what kind of gave you the sense that this kid could one day be the type of elite player he's turned out to be?
Well, that, believe it or not, was 20 years ago. And I got a long story. I'll try to make it as short as I can, but it is kind of funny. If I'm not mistaken, I was up on the range that afternoon, and I'd gotten a phone call from the golf shop, said that there's going to be a couple coming out with a young kid that wanted to just meet you and just kind of look around a little bit. And he might hit a few balls, if that's okay. I said, absolutely, that'd be fine. I look forward to it. I'll be between lessons. I'll stop by, you know, and visit. And so I, you know, was up there. And sure enough, here comes a couple with this kid that was about as tall as one of those den caddies. I mean, little bitty tiny thing. And I'm going, okay, here it is. I'm going to get the speech about the next coming of Tiger Woods right here. It's fixing to happen. Okay, I'm all prepared for that. All right, good.
You had heard that before, right?
A couple times before. And I finished up with Justin, and I was walking down the line. The little kid had started hitting a few balls. Parents are standing back there and hadn't said much. And I walked down, introduced myself, and we talked for a little bit. And, you know, and all this, the whole time, this little Scotty is hitting golf balls, tiny little fella. And I kind of watched him, and I said, hi, Scotty. He said, hi, how are you? Temperature was about 105, and Scotty's got on a pair of khaki slacks. You know, said there's something odd about this kid right off the bat. And so I watched him there for a couple of minutes, and I patted him on the head, getting ready for the Tiger Woods speech that never came from the parents. They didn't say much of anything. And I just kept watching. And 10 minutes led into 30. And the more I watched and interacted with him, it led into an hour. And it led into almost an hour and a half. Just watching and questioning and listening to an intellect and a kid who was barely 7 years old that was far and away something I'd never really seen. And he would hit a shot to a target. He might hit three balls with a 7 iron, then change to a 5 iron, and he changed his target. Everything he did was with a purpose and tied to a target. You know, after that, the parents said something along the lines of, do you think Scotty would be happy out here? I said, not only would Scotty be happy out here, look at all these other kids and people that are around. He would have a great time out here, and I think y'all would too. They joined the club the next day, and the rest is kind of history.
Did the shape of the shots, did the actual shots he was hitting with the purpose, did it astound you? Did you, was that something you hadn't seen necessarily for a kid at that age?
Never, ever. Most kids, little Johnny's going to get up there and he's going to make a swing and look how good I am. Look at this golf swing. You know, when they're that little, you know, they don't know, you know, heck, this kid knew. And yet he never gave any indication that's what he was trying to do. I would ask him to do this and do that, and he'd do it to a target. The cool thing about what he did, if I remember it correctly, was taking clubs, and he would vary the height. He'd take the 7 iron, he'd be hitting this shot, go up in the air, you know, carry out there, it looked really good going to the target, and then all of a sudden here comes one about half the height and just smashed. And for a little bitty guy, I'm going, he understands impact too. It was amazing.
Randy, had he worked with somebody before that day? What, naturally, the game just sort of came to him, that kind of ability?
Yeah, but when they moved down here from New Jersey, okay, he was up there, and his parents would take him to this driving range where there was a gentleman there. So I understand he kind of worked with him, you know, in his infant stages there as he first started hitting balls, I guess. And then, you know, Scotty gets here when he's 7. So he had his hands on the club. Well, let's put it this way. I haven't seen a 7-year-old with a great grip yet, and he didn't have one. Trust me. They were all over the place. But he knew what the club face was doing. And that, I thought, was really – that was something that got my attention.
Randy Smith, the 2002 National PGA of America Teacher of the Year, and the man who – has helped develop the incredible skills possessed by Scottie Scheffler. Hey, Randy, so if you would, what happened next in terms of the development of that kid with the grip? What did you do to help with the refinement process that began what was obviously a successful junior career and then onward?
You know, I learned a ton from watching him. And I learned one thing. Find out what the student is thinking. Find out what he wants and what he's looking for before I put my, shape the swing to look this way and do this. I found out what he wanted, and that helped me kind of develop. So when something wouldn't work because there was something in the technique, say when he was 12, 14 years old in that area, well, a little bit of a change here. And it took a while to get the grip to close to where it is today. It took a while. There's little bitty baby steps as we went along, because everything this kid was driven by was how good that shot was to that target. And I mean, it was all about the target. I could not do anything that would destroy that. You know, I had to keep the head. It was baby steps, little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit here, until he hit his growth spurt. When he hit his growth spurt, all bets are off. There are a lot of things that need to be kind of worked with, because he probably to this day had the most violent growth spurt of any kid I've ever worked with.
Just in terms of height or the entire body?
Everything. Height. He just jumped, 14, 15, 16, 17, that period just jumped to the point where muscles hurt, joints hurt. And then you had to kind of go around some of those things to get to the end result. And the end result for Scottie Scheffler is the performance of the shot that he hit. And if the shot is what he's looking to create, then the technique comes with it. Instead of throwing a bunch of technique and this is what we're going to do and hope like heck that ball does what we want to do.
Yeah.
Got the ball doing similar, it's doing what we want to do, little bitty refinements to get it to do it better. And then he owned his own swing because there was so much interaction between us when he was little. I mean, he's a fiery, competitive little guy, but there was a lot of interaction. What I want, what I feel, this is what I do.
You know, you hear that all the time, you being a great coach and instructor, asking a student, you know, what do you want to accomplish? Now that's, Randy, that's one thing for somebody who might be 30, 40, 50 years old, who might want to get from being a 90 shooter to an 80 shooter. How the heck does a 7 or 8 year old know what he or she wants to accomplish, what their goals are? Is that what made him even more unusual? Did he have defined goals to say, yeah, Mr. Smith, I want to do this by this age?
Not at all. None of it. What he might say is, I want to be able to shoot a three-pointer like an NBA player when I'm only 4'9". That would be a goal. As far as he's going to go to the University of Texas and be an All-American, never came up. Nothing came up. It was like everything was day to day or month to month. It was based on short term because the long term would follow. And I thought that was something that was very amazing about this kid, that he didn't start talking about playing in the Masters. You know, you hear all those stories. I'm going to be, he can imagine all that, but he didn't verbalize things like that. He still says it to this very day. And it kind of rings very, very true. I want to be a little better each day. I want to get a little better each tournament. I want to be a little better. And I think he's been doing that since he's little bitty, and it's worked out pretty well.
With mom and dad not telling you that he's the next Tiger Woods, I would imagine they've continued to be that way. Is having parents like that who are not hovering, is that make your job? It has to make your job easier.
Well, that goes without saying. You know, any parent can look back at how they've approached things, and I am the worst because I thought my son was going to be the next linebacker for the Dallas Cowboys when he was playing peewee ball. You know, why don't you make that cross step and take him on at the line of scrimmage? Come on, Blake, let's get with it. What? Golly, you know, and all of a sudden it dawned on me, I'm not even coaching the team, and I'm back there saying things like that. And then one day I kind of woke up, said, that's a little bit much. And when a parent gets too involved, it becomes more important. The kid realizes that it's more important for the parent than it is for him. And if it's more important for the parent than it is for him, he ain't going to do it very long.
Kid recognizes that, right, Randy?
Absolutely, they recognize it. And I think parents are getting a lot better. But, you know, they're still get a little bit too close. You want to give him the best chance, or her, the best chance to succeed if they really care about succeeding. But they also have to have the common sense to let the experts come in and say, this is how we approach it. And Scott Scheffler and Diane Scheffler, you know, we had our moments, but it wasn't because of Hover Dad. He just wanted the best for his kid. He was very protective of Scotty. I do not blame him one bit. But those people, you know, made it where Scotty was real. Even when he was winning all these junior tournaments, Scotty was real. He still had three sisters. The three sisters are just as important in their activities in life as you are, Scotty. Scotty knew that to this very day. He knows that. They've pretty much done it the right way.
We're chatting with Randy Smith, and it's an honor and privilege to have him on Musings on Golf. I want to touch a little bit more. I mean, his parents, you know, they live in New Jersey, and they decide that they're going to make a move to Texas because apparently they had this strong belief that they had something special in their son, even though they would never come out and say that. But, you know, in reality, Randy, how many parents would make, you know, a huge move like that just for the benefit of their son to play better golf?
Well, you know, a lot of those stories are floating around out there, but they really came because Diane Scheffler is a very successful businesswoman. And she got an opportunity to have a job in the Dallas area at a very nice, strong law firm. And that was a big driving force. But it was also, it's Dallas, got a little different weather, little ones coming up, it's a good place to live along with the job. And they didn't move here so he could be the next coming of anything. They could have just as easily moved to Phoenix or wherever, but the job was there, and she did a marvelous job while she was with that firm.
How'd you get started in golf in general, and when did the desire to teach the game really start to sink in for you?
Well, I got involved in golf. Of course, I honestly, back in Odessa, Texas, my dad exposed me to
Mm-hmm.
it, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was really cool, but I also honestly thought I was going to be the next middle linebacker for the Odessa Permian football team. And, after a separated shoulder, a few broken fingers, other things, it just decided maybe there wasn't any room for a 140-pound middle linebacker in high school. I decided then that was what golf was it. And I kept pushing it, played college golf a little bit, but whatever. And that kind of snowballed into the golf business. And Kelly, I've known for a long time. And I became a head professional finally, and I was going to fold all my shirts a certain way, and I've got a color wheel for displays. My shop's going to look better than everybody else's, and I'm going to put on the best novel tournaments at the club, and I'm going to be that head professional. And I did that, and I started out going to every seminar, get my hands on, merchandising, the route. Kelly's been there, and I did all that thinking that was it. And then one day I'd been giving a few lessons, so to speak. I was giving a few lessons. I was working with people interested in it. But it was, I got to get back up there and make sure the shop is clean and all my shirts are folded. And then one day I'd been working with this little kid, and he went off to play a pretty good junior tournament. What work we were doing, that's good, hit this, do that. He goes up and wins a junior tournament up in Oklahoma. I get a phone call from him. It was a big tournament. He's about 13 years old, maybe that. And on the phone call, he says, I said, won't you bring that trophy by here on the way home from Oklahoma? Come on in. So late that evening, or late afternoon, he comes walking in the bag room with this trophy as big as him. And I said, I'm so proud of you. And I really felt something really weird come over me. I said, that's cool. He turns around and says, here we go. Okay, I gotta go home. He turns around and he walks off, and he gets about 10 yards away from me. He turns around and he walks back and he says, I want to know more. I said, more. Okay. And he was pointing dead at me. He wasn't pointing at somebody else. He pointed at me. And I went back in and I thought about that statement for about 2 hours. And I said, I went out and I looked at my color wheel. I looked at how nice the shirts are. I said, I've got people that can do that. I may be messing up here. And within a week, I changed all my seminars, the ones I was teaching, a couple of them. And I changed everything and started getting as much information. I went to the teaching seminars, the playing seminars from the PGA of America. And, I started watching the, Jim Flicks and the Chuck Cooks and, Charlie Epps, all those guys, getting information. And over a year's period of time, I was soaking stuff up, and I mean, it was just blowing my mind. And then it finally hit me after a couple of years. I was given more lessons. I felt better about teaching. And then all of a sudden, I said, "Huh." I came up with a philosophy. Said, Randy, why aren't you ever in the shop? You're always up there teaching. This is the way it was. I said, it's real simple. If I can take that player over there, that man or woman, and take their slice and turn them into a hooker, it may not help their score, but it's certainly going to help their attitude. And if I can do that, I can sell all the damn shirts I want in that golf shop because I have a customer that's there. They're not there for the cheeseburger. They're there because golf is in their system.
Relationships, right? You built a customer for life.
Oh yeah. Okay, you think about a slicer. it doesn't matter. If they hit a low burning snap hook, they're going to go, wow, I can do this. And if they can do that, then you've built, exactly like you said, you've built a relationship. But it also is fertilizer for the teacher, because dadgummit, I can make a difference in that player.
A special guest, Randy Smith, and any annals of phenoms as kids, it's very rare that it manifests itself. I want to share with you, Randy, I grew up only a few miles from Carl Yastrzemski, competed against him in high school, and his dad, when Carl was 4 years old, and his dad was a very accomplished player, never played professionally, but was, you know, really great in town teams and that, made the statement, my son is going to be in the Hall of Fame. And you know what? He worked every day pitching the call, making him hit. You know, one of the few stories that I know of where that parent had that vision and had enough ability to push the right buttons. I mean, I don't recommend it for any parent. Matter of fact, just the opposite. I recommend that parents just enjoy watching their sons compete or daughters compete in whatever sport. And if they show a promise, you know, just encourage that promise, but don't be overbearing, because I think too many young athletes have gone sour because, as you said, the parents are trying to live their life through one of their offspring, and that's always very sad to see.
Yeah, Bob, I agree with you, and I'm going to kind of rethink my statement a little bit and add to it. I think the best parent things that I've seen, and I'm looking at from golf, because those stories like that, my kid's going to be in the Hall of Fame. I guarantee you, there's a lot of parents that thought that same thing, but they forgot to fertilize that. They forgot to take that kid on the golf course and play golf with them. Yeah. They forgot to sit there and watch them hit balls and giggle with them. They forgot that part. And if they can fertilize that by playing with them, exposing them, and understanding, you know, with that gummit, they started crying when you want to take them from the golf course. So that's when you need to make sure you get them some instruction. When that kid starts balling, when you're going to take them home, you know you've got something.
A couple of technical questions I've got to ask you. Look, we've all seen as viewers of the game, Scotty's, you know, considerable right leg movement at impact and through to the finish. It's unorthodox. It's hardly conventional, certainly for a player of his caliber. How did that part of his swing come to be?
Okay, well, can you explain it to me? His footwork? I've never heard that. Seriously, I better go.
First time question here on Music Zone Golf.
Oh, yeah. Golly, you caught me totally off guard on that. Not the footwork deal?
Yeah.
Okay. It would probably not be something that you would go out and put on somebody. Number one, you can't teach that. That is a player feeling certain things. And you also notice that he's 6'3 and change, and he's got arms 47. I mean, they're long. He's a long, long guy, long, strong guy. And he also is an athlete. He can play basketball with anybody. He's a world-class pickleball player. Now, I'm not talking playing the A-League. This is a stud pickleball player. All the sports that he played them as an athlete. Golf is no exception. He hits certain things. He'll make his feet move in response to what his hands are feeling, creating a shot. His feet move in response to how hard he's going to hit that shot. Sometimes he hits shots extremely hard, but it's usually creating some sort of spin, and the feet have to move to support it. But if you break the footwork down, Kelly, the footwork, if you go to some of the greatest drivers of the golf ball that have ever played, and that would be your Billy Casper, that would be a Mark Calcavecchia, But probably one that really stands out is Greg Norman's right foot slide. None of those players had the speed and the athleticism, no offense to any of them, that Scottie Scheffler has. And when Scotty goes through a golf ball, that foot may break loose. If he's going to hit a cut, you may see the left foot move a little bit first. So he can clear out. And when he does that, his hands are great feelers. They know exactly where that club face is. And that's how he kind of creates the magic. We'll get a picture of his perfect footwork, perfect finish swing. He can do it. He can do it on command. The only difference is it just doesn't go quite as far. It's not quite as high. And he doesn't quite feel the same.
So with factoring in his height and the arms and all, is that footwork action, is that something that aspiring good players, golfers in general, should they emulate that? Do you teach that style, or is that just something that sort of comes naturally to Scottie Scheffler?
It comes naturally to Scottie Scheffler. You couldn't teach it. I mean, there have been forever I've been looking at this. Look, we're imitating Scottie's footwork. Our friend Lee Trevino, who's been out here, and I'm around Lee a lot, and I love listening to his commentary. He does a great rendition of Scottie's footwork, but of course Lee fell down when he did it. But you can't do that. That's how he feels things. You would never try to teach that to somebody, but what you would teach to somebody is the fact that feeling where the club face is throughout the golf swing, and what you're doing at impact with that club face to create certain shots is what you would work on. And if the footwork starts moving around a little bit, fix it. But if the footwork is not in detriment to the shot striking that the player's doing, let it go for a while.
Randy, let me ask you, you don't travel on a weekly basis with Scotty, right?
No. I used to be out a little bit more. This past year, I didn't travel hardly at all, but I would be out. Scotty's been out there maybe up to 12 times a year.
Amazing, amazing. Would he get on the phone if he had a bad day and say, Randy, this didn't feel right, that didn't feel right. What do you suggest? Or would he work it out on his own?
He would normally work all that out on his own. One of the most flattering times for me is when I'll get a phone call or a text that refers to something, maybe wanting to do a little different. To be quite honest with you, in the last year and a half to 2 years, there's been basically nothing of importance but hitting shots, checking certain spots. I look at all the things, but I don't bring them up to him. The worst thing I feel like that Scotty could do is get into working on something in his physical golf swing. If he has to work on something, just do that at home, just check it, whatever. But when he goes to a tournament, it's about hitting a shot to a target.
Randy, I can't think anybody more qualified to answer my following question. Scottie Scheffler, a better person than a golfer?
Better person.
Wow. Aren't we lucky in this sport to have him as an ambassador?
Absolutely. He does it a little differently. And that's the thing. He is the fieriest golf competitor that I've ever been around. He is the funniest I've ever been around. And I'll tell you what, if I'm going to get in a bar fight, I'm going to go find that boy. I'm going to help. He's going to be on my side. He is that way. But when you see him, it's like that duck on the water. He's that way. But when it comes go time, he has got so much competitive drive.
The Randy Smith I know, in addition to all the accolades from the PGA of America as a teacher and so forth, you've won more national awards, 18, than any other PGA golf professional. Randy, a lot of those were from playing a whole lot of golf holes in a particular day, raising a lot of money. Could you talk a little bit about that? I understand you have something that you continue on called, what's it, the Royal Oaks Great 108, as sort of an extension of what you did at the PGA of America for years.
Well, it's the Great 108. It goes, the money goes to junior golf. And We call it the Great 108 because, you know, there's it used to be playing all night. You know, that was the first thing. We're going to play all night and all day, 24 hours for National Golf Day. Yeah, we did that for a while, and then there's some things came up that told me I better find another way to do that after about 9 years of it. And then we taught all night. Now that's a bit of a challenge. We have lights and everything. We teach for 24 hours. That's a cool thing. Boy, we're going to do that for a while. Then certain things happened. It just kept evolving to a, we play with the kids, the staff here at Royal Oaks, and the Royal Oaks members get behind it. It's unbelievable. Played 108 holes. We just with the kids, 9 holes with each one. And we had four or five of our staff out there playing with them, and the money, you know, the. I had phone calls from people. We haven't got our deal about the Great 108 yet. But are y'all going to do it this year? Because I want to make sure we allot. Oh, yeah, we're going to do it. Yes. And it's become such a tradition here that it is absolutely unbelievable. And this past year, I've kind of laid up a little bit and was just coming off of, I couldn't play 108 holes. No way.
You had a big back issue, right?
Yeah, we reworked it, put some new parts in that thing, get it working the way it's supposed to. But we went back to teaching, the whole staff up there teaching kids all day long from 7 in the morning till 8 at night.
Wow.
And good Lord, so much gratification in that because, you know, the kids enjoy it, but these scholarship dollars are for real, you know, they're. You know, the people at the NTPGA have all these scholarships, and we're just happy to be a part of it.
I know you've had more than 100 juniors who have gone on under your tutelage to receive college scholarships. You know, you've worked with Holt Knost and Ryan Palmer, in addition to Justin and Scotty. One final question for me, and I know I've talked a lot here, but Randy, every interview we ask our guest who he or she would play with as far as like a dream foursome, who would round that out, who those three people would be, whether they're still with us or deceased. And where you would play that round of golf. And we've had some really fascinating responses. How about you, Randy Smith? Who would be those three and where would you play?
You know, I've kind of had a feeling that question was going to come up, and you know, I've given answers to it before, and you give all the ones you think you should give, and then I can get a new list of four. I'd like to play with my dad, Arnold Palmer, probably I might play with Scotty. Yeah, put him out there because my dad. But before he passed, he got to see Scotty when he was tiny. So I think that would be a good matchup for those two. And then you throw Arnold Palmer in that group, and we just play right here at Royal Oaks Country Club.
How do you think your dad would feel if he were here watching you working with a guy who's won, what, two of the last three Masters? What kind of satisfaction would that bring?
Oh, a bunch. He'd probably say something along the lines of, should have done that with that other kid. If you can do that, I said, typical deal. I'd tell him, I said, look, it's not me doing it. You know, I haven't hit a shot yet. I'm throwing some stuff out there, but this kid right here, I sure like the way he's hitting those shots. And just keep doing it. There you go. You know, he would put something on me like that. Why don't you do this sooner? It's about as soon as I could do it.
Randy, it's been a really an honor and a privilege. And I have one last question. I think I know the answer, but I like your response. I show up on a cruise ship, and my dining partners are Scotty and his lovely wife. How many days do you think we'd be cruising before I would even know that Scotty was a professional golfer?
You would probably find out on the dock when y'all got back, when one of the people helping with the luggage said, Mr. Scheffler, it's so good to see you. I really enjoy watching you play golf. Oh, thank you very much. That's about when you'd find out.
What a compliment. And it's been a real honor and thrill, Randy. I've known you for a long time. I admire your work ethic. I admire everything about Randy Smith. You're wonderful for the world of golf. And on behalf of our Musings on Golf listeners, Kelly, I'm going to say goodbye. But if you want to put a finishing touch, you know, Kelly, the son of a, you know, Max Elbin, head professional at Burning Tree for 50 years. Kelly's heart for this sport is bigger than anybody I've ever worked with.
You know, thanks, Bob. Randy, I would leave it with this. You know, the PGA Championship is the championship of the PGA of America. And I'm wondering what that would mean for you as one of its celebrated golf professionals to have a student win that championship.
Oh, it'd be phenomenal. You know, I made the mistake, you know, of holding the Wanamaker trophy back when I was on the board and back when I was around your father, matter of fact. You know, and that's a heavy piece of equipment there. That's heavy.
Yes, it is.
And you know, the funny thing is, I think he could support that weight without any problem whatsoever. As far as, you know, what it would be, it's kind of like, you know, I'm a member of the PGA, so is he, and he won the championship. That's my championship.
Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry, and you should too. Folks, I love these golf shoes. They're made of deer skin and calf skin. They've got a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And I got to tell you, they are so incredibly comfortable. So head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best, play your best with William & Harry. Hey, you know, Bob, it was wonderful to hear from Randy Smith again. And it, frankly, it's been great to have a couple of terrific partners, corporate partners in Titleist and William & Harry throughout the year. Great people, Bob. Great products. You and I have gotten to know Rhett Butler really well at William & Harry. Really make a beautiful golf shoe. And their support has helped us tremendously. Really, really appreciate them.
No, good point there, Kelly, because I know anybody that sees the William & Harry golf shoe, they automatically say, we want a pair of those. Perhaps the most stylish, functional golf shoe on the market today. And big shout out to Rhett Butler and his family to have a happy, happy holiday. And we look forward to big things in 2025.
Okay, so let's talk about a couple things before we close this out, Bob. We mentioned about Tiger's return at the PNC Championship this weekend. Anytime he tees it up, it's significant. It very well could be the last time that golf fans get to see him on TV. He'll be playing with his son, Charlie. It means a lot to him, doesn't it? And I think it would mean a lot for any dad or mother to be able to play with their kids in an event like this. Should be a lot of fun again. And I would think, you know, that he wants to win. But my sense on this one could very well be that Charlie's the one as stronger and as bigger as this kid's gotten, who may carry Team Woods.
Well, very well possible, but I know one thing, and I've known Tiger a long, long time. Tiger would do anything to play with Charlie.
Yeah.
You know, the pain level that he is willing to endure playing with Charlie versus any other thing, including playing in the Masters. Mm. I mean, this is more important to Tiger, and certainly sets a good example as a father. And what's going to happen with Charlie? We don't know. I mean, there's so many talented young golfers out there nowadays, and they're all getting the best of instruction, and they're all getting great tournaments to play in on great golf courses. You just can't make a prediction that somebody's going to be a great one.
Another thing on my list this week, Bob, this caught me a little bit by surprise. I got to be really honest with you. Blades Brown, 17-year-old. He's the top high school player in the country. He's really good, right? Out of Brentwood, Tennessee, Nashville suburb. Kid can flat out play. He's made the decision to forego college golf. And much like Akshay Bhatia, and they share an agent, by the way, which I found kind of interesting. Bhatia made the decision a couple of years ago to forego college. He's played very well. The lefty's played very well. He's won on the PGA Tour. I don't know. It just seems to me opportunity missed with this kid. If it were me, if I was the parent, man, I'd want that kid, particularly with the name, image, and likeness dollars that are available at the college level, I'd have that kid play at least one, if not 2 years of college before he joins the professional ranks. But that's just me.
I couldn't agree more. You can't get those years back. You cannot get those years back. You can get all the money in the world, but you can't look back and say, boy, what a great experience it was playing collegiate golf. The money will come if you're good enough. That's what people don't understand. The money will come if you are good enough. You don't have to rush to chase it. I wish Blades the very best of luck. I hope he's making the right decision for him and for his family. And that's all I can do. Do I agree with him doing it? I certainly do not.
He's not doing it blindly, I can tell you that much. He's already got several events lined up where he's getting sponsors, invitations, including the American Express in January. That will be his first event as a professional. Bob, this kid's going to be playing PGA Tour golf before he's actually even graduated from high school. He's only 17. He played well at the Myrtle Beach event last year, his first tour event. I wish him well. He's got a great name, Blades Brown, but we'll see. Maybe he's a heck of a lot better than I'm thinking he is. Want him to play well. I just love the college golf experience for so many reasons. Bob, as we close again, it was great to hear from Randy Smith, PGA of America professionals like Randy. They grow our game, they build our game. Man, has he ever meant so much to the life, really the life of Scottie Scheffler. Not just Scottie Scheffler the golfer, Scottie Scheffler the person.
Randy Smith is a cut above, and we're so honored to have him make an encore appearance on Musings on Golf, one of our special guests all year. We had a lot of requests from the listeners of Musings on Golf to bring Randy back and give them another opportunity to hear the magic that this man has bestowed upon Scottie Scheffler. We're all excited to have him join us for his encore appearance.
And we'll be back next week with a very special Christmas show on Monday, 2 days before Christmas. Until then, for my good friend Bob Bupka, Kelly Elbin signing off on Musings on Golf.